Chapter 21. Sharing Secrets. Juliana was nearly skipping through the halls of the palace the next morning, her evening with Brannis in the other world being a memory just hours old. Iridan had not been in her bed when she awoke, though he had been when she had fallen asleep. Her only tiny worry was that she had given some of her actions in Tellurak as she slept.
"A dream is a dream, unless you are not a dreamer yourself," she reasoned.
Even if she had talked in her sleep, she could hardly be held at fault for it. She was certain Iridan was stuck in Vaedris. Her destination had not been far from the chambers she shared with Iridan. The wards nearly glowed in the light, making Kyrus's room simple to find, even had she not known where to look for it. Juliana knocked softly on the door, hoping not to draw attention to her visit. Unfortunately, the ward kept the knock from making any noise at all. From its concealed sheath, she drew Freedom, having assigned the name to the heavier of her daggers that had seen her through Rashan's ordeal the day before. When he had come to let her and Iridan out of the cells, he had found her collapsed and nearly insensible, but she had broken the wards. The door had been unlocked, and only awaiting the return of her strength before she would have left under her own power. She took Freedom and jabbed at the door with it, hard, watching in the ether for a reaction. Wobbly waves shuddered through it, like poking a finger into the still water of a wash basin. It gave no sign of relenting before her attack, but it served better than knocking with her fist. After a moment, the ward relaxed and the door opened. Juliana snuck inside before a surprised Kyrus could react or object. She shut the door again behind her. She felt the rush of ether past her as the ward sealed them in together.
"Fair morning, my love," she grinned mischievously at him, throwing her arms around his neck and kissing him passionately. "Guess who you are not?"
She still held him close by, her fingers laced behind Kyrus's neck. She was still smiling at him.
"By the winds, girl, how did you ever find me out?"
Kyrus deadpanned in reply before his own face split wide in a grin to match her own. He could not help himself. She was infectious.
"I admit a bit more muscle looks good on you, but I suppose, given that you have met Soria, that I am not one to cast aspersions regarding idleness," Juliana giggled. "You had an outlandish tale, but the alternative was even more so until I saw for myself. Even when I first saw Brannis, I thought perhaps I had discovered where your sword and armor had ended up. The plate hid your physique well enough, and Avalanche would be just as deadly in the hands of a scrivener as a knight, I supposed."
"And my appearance?" Kyrus offered. "Not enough of a giveaway?"
"Of course not. I was looking for Brannis all along. I was hoping to identify you by his look, and I found him. I was, perhaps, a bit blinded by desire for you. All I saw was my Brannis. I didn't stop to think that probably was not what I should have found."
"So when was it that you realized?" Kyrus asked. They had taken so little time to really talk in Tellurak. There was more privacy to be had behind his wards than Soria's paltry ones. Even without ether vision, Brannis had been able to tell that her runes were shabby.
"You sure you want to know?"
Her grin spread a bit wider. Kyrus chuckled but nodded.
"Well, you may not have even known about them, but you have the tiny little scars on your back. Well, Brannis does at least. They do not look like anything, but you can feel the little raised lines where they differ from the skin around them. I made those years ago."
Kyrus blushed. Juliana laughed out loud.
"I should check to make sure you don't have them too. I would feel silly if you had them as well, and that other Brannis over there had gotten a matching set by coincidence."
She moved her hands to the hem of his tunic and grabbed hold.
"Oh, I am a lucky fool. A bad friend, though, but perhaps I can find some way to make amends."
Kyrus was exhausted. Juliana napped peacefully on his chest. There were 100 things he ought to have been doing, and eventually Warlock Rashan would be looking for him. The wards at the door might thwart him, or they might not. Kairos's wards were simple, but well-formed and powerful. Whether he was kept out or not, whether he could see within or not, eventually the wards would have to be lifted for Juliana and him to emerge. Things seemed so much simpler now in Tellurak than they did in Vaedrus. The Imperial Circle's arcane policies had parted them, but had no provision for going back and righting that miscarriage of justice. Juliana and Iridan had wed. Brannis had been there to hear the vows exchanged. They were pledged for life. Not the convenience of the Emperor, the Warlock, or certainly not for some unschooled sorcerer who was not even officially a part of the Imperial Circle, however powerful his source might be. Dark thoughts drifted idly through Kairos's head as he watched the serene, sated beauty playing out on the face that rose and fell with his breathing.
I could kill him, Kairos pondered. Strong as everyone says he is, he would hardly put up a fight, I think. If hurled fire can wound Rashan like that, I would need no other weapon against him. Or I could get him killed in battle. He seems to come close every time, even without effort. Just send him to the battlefront and wait. Try again if I must. It is my duty to send men to die, to choose whose sacrifice benefits the Empire.
Kairos shook the thoughts away.
No, I could never do it. I can only think thus when I ignore that it is Iridan, not some nameless, faceless suitor of my love. Her husband, my best friend. Never. Might that I could convince him to give her up. It was never what he wanted. With my emergence as a sorcerer, I am no longer an embarrassing match. Maybe I could approach Shader to see about it.
Kairos knew that was not going to work. An alliance with the Warlock's son was too politically valuable to abandon. He might have chanced it before the wedding had occurred, but there would be too much fallout from the dissolution of the Union. He turned his attentions back to Juliana herself. He watched her, and she pillowed upon his chest. He felt her breath on his skin. He saw her eyelids flicker.
Are you watching Soria's mischief as you nap? He wondered.
She could probably hear the beating of his heart. Juliana stirred a bit, stretching and arching her back, working the sleep out of her muscles. Her eyes opened sleepily, drawing a smile from Kairos, which she matched. She planted a kiss on his chest, then another, working her way up to his lips one kiss at a time. She wrapped her arms around him. When she rolled over, Kairos found himself pulled atop her. He was helpless to resist.
I can stop this any time I want to, he told himself.
He could not want to. Rashan paced the hall, fuming.
No Iridan, no Juliana, no Brannis.
Iridan's absence at morning practice had been his first annoyance. The boy had been furious at Brannis after being released from the sorcerer cells in the dungeon. Hearing that Juliana had managed all of her escape save for leaving the cell had stung. Seeing the blatant destruction Brannis had wrought upon the cells and surrounding dungeon had both awed and shamed him.
He knew that Brannis had thrown their draw. How could he have not, if he was capable of outdrawing the wards in those cells?
It had taken all his persuasion to keep Iridan from running off to confront Brannis about his deception. Once word got around Cadrus of Brannis's feat of power in the dungeons, everyone else would know that Iridan had won their draw by sheer force of pity. Eventually, Juliana had promised to see to calming him, and they had retired to their chambers.
I hope she did not kill him and dump his body in the sea, Rashan mused darkly.
Iridan had warded their door too well for him to spy on them within. That same ward made him think that Iridan must have released it to leave. Juliana was strong, to be sure, but not to the point of breaking Iridan's wards.
Unless perhaps she used that dagger again to destroy them physically, Rashan muttered in his head.
Rashan waited. He stared at the door to Brannis's chambers, impatient but preferring to wait and see who emerged, and in what state, rather than barge in and betray his presence. Or worse, attempt to barge in and fail. Worry crept into the warlock's thoughts, winning a long battle of attrition against his anger and annoyance.
What if something has gone terribly wrong in there? Could Iridan and Brennus's imposter have dueled within? Did Brennus try to enact his escape with another attempt at a transference spell?
The explanations seemed implausible. Iridan was angry with Brennus, but should have held no illusions about trying to fight him. Had Brennus tried to get back to Tellurak, Rashaan would have felt even a failed attempt reverberating in the ether. Rashaan waited. Paranoia crept into his mind once more.
This could be a trap, or a ruse, a diversion. What if the wards were sealed from the outside? What if no one has seen them by some other coincidence or trick, and the room was left for me to puzzle over while they hatched some plan or other? Stop it, the warlock ordered himself. This is the path to madness.
Rashaan stalked down to one of the disused sitting rooms on the floor and procured for himself an easy chair. Setting it up just outside Brannis's door, he flopped down into it to wait out whoever might be inside.
Warlock Rashaan! Came a call from the far end of the corridor.
A thin stick of a young man in a messenger's uniform approached him, handing him a rolled sheet of parchment tied with a ribbon. Had it been a matter of true import or secrecy, it would have been sealed with wax or in a case. Rashaan was bored, though, and welcomed whatever mild diversion the missive would supply. Airships 5 and 6 are confirmed functional. All runes tested. New designations. Starflower. Eagle Wing. Flying crews have been assigned. Awaiting orders and supplemental personnel. Sorcerer Uthgrin Fernwall. 4th Circle. Rashaan read it over thrice, brief as it was, before it hit him.
Where is the 4th airship? Why is it not mentioned?
Your pardon, warlock, but the ether hammer set sail, if that is the term, this morning, first light.
The messenger replied stiffly, uncomfortable with the warlock's attention fixed on him. Little did the lad know that Rashaan would as soon harm him as smash a dish because he disliked a meal. It would have been a childish response, mindless destruction perpetrated on one undeserving of blame.
By whose order? Rashaan asked.
He had guesses, but wished to hear confirmation.
I was not told, warlock, the messenger replied, cringing but not backing away.
I really, really must do something about this reputation of mine.
Understood. Carry on, Rashaan said, then dismissed the relieved young man.
There is at least one answer I will be pleased with, one I will care little for, and one that someone just may have to die for.
Later, too much later by Rashaan's reckoning, the wards relaxed and the door peeked open. Before it could slam shut again, Rashaan thrust it open with his magic.
Well, Oath Daughter, how good of you to freshen up before rejoining the day. I hope the Marshal of all of Cadran's armies has not kept you from any important business this morning.
Rashaan's words dripped venom as he strode into Brannis's chambers. He saw the fresh-scrubbed skin and smelled the masculine scent of the bath salts the palace staff kept stocked in the rooms of the male residents.
Not at all, but it seems we kept the Imperial Regent from his charge of running the Empire, Kyrus butted in, protecting Juliana from the warlock's direct attention.
He was still straightening his tunic and buckling on his sword belt, decorative though he considered the weapon.
Oh, you had best have a good explanation for this, Brannis, Rashaan growled. I spent half the morning awaiting your presence.
Sounds like something you could have delegated. I had no appointment this morning. You like direct answers despite being rarely one to give them.
You want my explanation? There she is, Kyrus pointed to Juliana.
Simplest explanation works the best at times. Perhaps you saw the little note I made in your book? Juliana looked puzzled, not aware of Kyrus's petty vandalism.
What have you done with Iridan?
Rashaan glared at one, then the other of them.
He is your problem each morning, Juliana put in. I have him at night, and the rest of the day is his to do with as he pleases. He was gone when I woke this morning, so I had assumed he was at practice.
Rashan took pause a moment. One of the new airships is missing, the Aether Hammer. What do you know of this?
It was expected to be ready at any time. I did not order it away. The Aether Hammer, Starflower, and Eagle Wing were going to be ordered to perform reconnaissance around Mune to check for Magrin's next move, Kyrus replied, more curious now than irritated at the warlock's rude entrance. Somehow, after the prior day's encounter, he could not bring himself to feel quite the same note of unease in Rashan's presence.
My suspicion, naturally, is that Iridan is aboard. What was his demeanor when last you saw him? The warlock asked, forgetting to make clear to whom he spoke.
A bit nervous. You were about to throw him in a cell, Kyrus answered innocently, not willing, in some obstinate portion of his mind, to realize that Juliana ought to have seen him much later than that.
Exhausted, Juliana answered. I think he took his anger and found that fine line between being afraid of me and trying to... She trailed off. She did not turn to look at Kyrus, her eyes losing their focus, aimed off somewhere roughly in the direction of Rashan. She did not blush often, but must have realized she was turning red.
I find myself realizing that I have no idea what you do to occupy your days, Rashan commented, sparing her the awkward silence she had dropped in their midst. Whatever it is, go off and see to it.
Juliana did not have to be told twice. She left quickly, not looking back at either of them. They waited in silence for a moment after she left. With a slight gesture, Rashan pulled the door closed.
It is you she should be ashamed of, not Iridan, Rashan commented mildly.
Kyrus could not tell if it was an accusation, wistfulness, or resignation. Perhaps it was a combination of the three.
Well, I mean, that is to say, he is her husband now, after all, Kyrus said. Certain things were bound to happen, I suppose. I did not...
Shut up, Rashan interrupted. Kyrus ceased his babbling.
I cannot abide idiocy, and I know you are better than this. If you have something to say for yourself, then say it.
She was always supposed to be mine, Kyrus said calmly, collecting himself.
Your betrothal was terminated. She was promised to Iridan and wed. It is too late to change that now, Rashan replied, as if lecturing.
Wrongly. She was meant to be mine. You waited and waited for Brannis to turn out to be some great sorcerer, for his promised talent to manifest itself. You were waiting for him to turn into me. I am here now, and your impatience has taken her from me. It was never supposed to have been Brannis, it was supposed to be me. I do not know what merit Gravis Archon's prediction may have had, but I was there, lost in the wrong world. I was dragon-walking among the tortoises, never seeing my own reflection to tell the difference between me and them. I belonged here. I belong with her.
Kyrus was out of breath at the end of his rant and could feel a bit of ether build up inside him. He had not even realized he was drawing it.
But you were not here. I had no way of knowing you would come. There was a war to be fought, an emperor to crown, an empire to put to rights. I had no time to waste. Iridan needs to be fighting to truly be a warlock. Unprepared as he is, he must leave the nest, and I must throw him out if needs be, though it looks as if he has taken that step on his own. If there is to be a wedding, there needs to be an heir. If a warlock goes off to war, there is some urgency involved in begetting that heir. If you must feel anger, direct it my way. I am used to unjust anger. Neither of them has done anything wrong in this, excepting what you and Juliana have just done. See that this was a one-time occurrence, and pray that her first child is not tall as a tree with brown hair, Rashan warned. Then we can put this behind us and continue our machinations. I still have great plans for you, Brannis.
Shader is my size and coloring, Kyrus muttered under his breath, knowing full well that Rashan would hear him. He got no response save for a warning glare.
Come by my office tonight. I have much to attend to this day and no further time for nonsense.
Rashan turned and left the room, with Kyrus unable to think of a pithy reply to send him off with.
You would not think it was nonsense if she was yours. Yes, that would have done nicely just a moment ago,
Kairos thought in the direction of the closed door. Kairos had taken a few meetings with his generals, read some reports, and written others. He had given new orders to the garrisons defending the border cities of Dolok, Sharefield, Wiselton, and Thinbrook, in the event that one of them was the next target of the Magrin main host. He had taken a few more books from the Tower of Contemplation libraries to read in the evening. He had considered seeking out Juliana to smooth things over with her. He was not upset with her at all, but thought better of it.
Brannis and Soria can talk it over in the morning, he reasoned.
Atop his mount, Kairos was on his way to see about the preparations on the two remaining airships that had not yet left the harbor, when he was approached by a messenger. Unlike most of the messengers he received, this one was neither one of his own men from the army nor part of the palace staff. He wore green and blue, chased in gold trim. It was not garb he recognized, to his chagrin.
I ought to know every one of the houses in the empire, both noble and sorceress. Brannis did not devote enough effort to studying such things. I should try to do better.
Marshal Brannis, the man reined his horse to a stop, just to the side of Kairos's path. A moment, if you would. Kairos took hold of his own horse's reins and pulled up gently.
Cursed thing, he swore to himself when the animal did not slow as quickly as he had wished. Brannis had a much better feel for these beasts. My thighs will ache from merely riding across town. Worse should I have to stop suddenly again.
Yes, who are you? Kairos demanded, setting the man aback.
Oh, I guess I should have recognized the livery, he chided himself.
Claremont Drydock, sir, of House Lurien, the man informed him formally. Sorcerer Dolvain would like to meet with you. Kairos was more intrigued than worried by the offer. Sorcerer Dolvain had been nothing but polite to Brannis, and Kairos had noticed no difference when he met the man himself for the first time, as Kairos, that is. The sorcerer kept a modest estate in Cadrus. He was only called a house at all because of his personal standing. His own blood descendants were not fit for Rashan's little book of matchmaking for the Imperial Circle. It took at least four generations telling true with sorcerous blood to gain that privilege. Dolvain had grandchildren at the Imperial Academy, but it would be their children who would win the distinction for House Lurien. The estate itself was tidy and well cared for. The sorcerer had great wealth of his own, by virtue of his standing in the inner circle, sufficient to maintain the 30 or so rooms Kairos judged it to have by the look it presented to the street. Kairos, or rather Brannis, had only met the sorcerer's wife in passing. She had taken on his name upon their marriage, and he could not recall what it had been before. Certainly it was some lower family. Chura Lorien had always seemed pleasant enough, though, and did nothing to dispel that impression when she greeted Kairos at the door. She looked older than the sorcerer, though he suspected that it was just a lesser talent for life extension that he was noticing. She had the look of a woman in her late 50s, with hair gone nearly all to gray and a light ashen tone to her skin. She seemed to make no attempt to disguise her age, lest she was using some trick Kairos could not see in his split ether light vision.
Marshal Brannis, thank you for taking this meeting on such short notice. Please do come in.
She ushered Kairos through the white marble archway and through the foyer. They climbed the open stair to the mezzanine level, where she brought him to a double door.
My husband is waiting for you inside. I will send one of the servants along in a bit with some refreshments.
Thank you, Kairos replied. He had considered asking what the meeting was about, but then thought better of it. Had Dolvain wanted him to know from someone else, he would have left an order to that effect. Kairos briefly studied the wards on the doors. They were as well-crafted as any he had seen in Cadrin, which admittedly was a small sampling, since Brannis had largely seen them as background decoration and not taken much note of them. He could not see inside, which was a good sign, since everyone seemed rather taken with all his raw magical talents. He had no reason to guess his ether vision was less than superlative.
"Come in, Brannis, do not just stand there gawking at my wards," came a voice from within.
Kyra smiled sheepishly and pulled at the door handle, which obliged him. The study was large but looked functional. While many wealthy men kept studies for entertaining or show as much as real work, Dolvain's was ill-kept and cluttered. A panoramic vista of the estate's back garden was obscured by a chalkboard on a wooden stand, a cloak rack, and a bookshelf that looked to be a late addition to the room's design. The desk behind which Dolvain sat was strewn with papers and books interstacked with each other. Piles of books cluttered nearly every surface of the room, from the little tables meant to display artwork or decorative sculptures, or merely set a drink upon, to all the chairs and the low chaise. As Kyrus took in the scene, the stack that rested on one chair nearest the desk rose and cleared a spot for Kyrus to seat himself.
"Have a seat, my boy. There is much to discuss and little enough time,"
Dolvain began crisply, his manner suggestive of a freight master trying to get a ship loaded before the tide went against him. Kyrus took the offered seat.
"What is this about? You do not normally have me here for meetings."
Kyrus left the implied question hanging in the air beyond the actual one.
"Frankness it is, then. Firstly, if anyone asks, I wanted to personally report that Iridan stole. No, make that commandeered, since I suppose he was within his rights. The ether hammer shortly before dawn this morning. The ship's assigned sorcerer, Janes Hysons, remained aboard, as did the crew that had already been picked for it."
Kyrus noted that Dolvain did not refer to ships as female, like so many of the nautical sorts were wont to.
"We do not know the destination or intent of Sorcerer Iridan, nor, as near as I can gather, was he acting under any authority but his own. I can vouch for the latter. Neither I nor Warlock Roshan gave any such order. The Warlock was rather put out this morning in looking for Iridan, in fact," Kyrus said. "I never doubted such. That is just the story that you must remember should anyone ask you later what we discussed. I wish to speak to you personally and privately due to the sensitive nature of who was involved. Understood?"
Dolvain asked. He seemed to be in a great hurry for something.
"Thus far, yes. What is it that we will really be discussing then?"
"Roshan Solaran's Regency of the Empire," Dolvain stated. Kyrus's blood ran cold. Roshan knows he has enemies within the Empire working against him. Dolvain must be one of them. No, if he is involved, he must be leading them.
"To what end?" Kyrus asked in a forced monotone. "Brannis, you see him as much as anyone. You know he is unstable. Can you deny it?" Dolvain asked, staring down Kyrus in what appeared to be an attempt to force an affirmative. "Volatile, perhaps, but predictable. He consistently works for the best interests of the Empire."
Kyrus found himself defending Roshan, even though he questioned the Warlock's actions constantly. He could not understand why he did so reflexively.
"Best interests? He has but one true skill, and he is not using it at all. Mune has fallen to Magrin, and he sat in Cadrus bartering favors to get his pick of emperors. In a 10-day or less, we will put a crown on some jumped-up bastard of his favorite emperor from the good old days, when he raised cities for amusement and enraged all of Kori. By the winds, half of Vaedrus would have declared a holiday had Lorimar killed every last one of us. He worries that if he leaves to go fight the war like he did in Rainsdark, that the conspiracy will take further control over the Empire. He already thinks those days he spent fighting off the Goblin army and dealing with the aftermath cost him support, and allowed dissent to solidify behind his turned back," Kyrus said. "Paranoia was always easier to justify after the fact, once you had rooted out all the secret plots against you. It seemed that Roshan was no fool in that regard."
"Do not mistake me. I do not call him a fool. A madman, a megalomaniac, a liar, and a usurper I will call him, but not a fool," Dolvain replied.
Kyrus was starting to enjoy the exchange. It was falling into a free-form debate. He was matching wits with one of the best sorcerers in the Cadran Empire, and it appeared that the stakes were to be,
"I see, you have convinced me, sir."
"I see now why I am defending him. I drew the short lot.
I started out on Rashan's side by default, since I owe him my position. If I concede Dolvain's points, I concede the argument.
Whom has he usurped? Kyrus asked. If he was to lose in the end, as he now suspected he must, since many of Rashan's actions were inexcusable, at least he would play out his side of the debate.
There was no emperor at the time. As warlock, he was highest rank in the empire.
A warlock who abandoned the empire for 100 winters. He lost all claim to any position of authority when he left Cadran to our fate. I admit there was no true emperor, but the empire had been prospering under our guidance.
Magocracy is so much more stable a system than consolidating power in one man chosen by birthright, and possessing no qualification beyond the pedigree of the seed that begot him, Dolvain said, having gotten to his feet and begun pacing as he spoke.
Tradition? Kyrus answered meekly in reply.
So you have been playing at this, have you? You know as well as I that the empire would be better off run by the inner circle than entrusted to the whim of that ennobled rapscallion Rashan plucked from the dung heap. There is no royal line anymore. If you want tradition, tradition would say that there needs to be a new dynasty. This time, though, that dynasty will be the imperial circle.
Why come to me now? Why should I not just tell Rashan? Better yet, why not kill you myself as a traitor?
Kyrus carefully kept his tone neutral, posing the question as a hypothetical rather than a bald threat.
The same reason you can even ask that question today. Had some puffed-up knight from a sorcerous bloodline made veiled threats against me like that, they would be finding charred bits of him from here to Zoran. But rumors spread, Brannis. Your little escape from the sorcerer cells in the dungeon and your altercation with the esteemed warlock in the sanctum yesterday, even the minor cataclysm that accompanied the discovery of your newfound power, all show that you have more power than any of us have seen before, Dolvain said solemnly. It may well come to the point where the future of the Cadran Empire rests on your conscience. Whether you become a monster like Rashan and take his place, or throw him down and let reason govern the empire.
Both those scenarios involve me confronting Rashan, Kyrus observed, pointing out what appeared to be an obvious flaw in Dolvain's logic.
I suppose the third option ought to be mentioned. He kills you, Dolvain added. You admit he is paranoid. You know he kills when he is uncertain of his course. How long can you expect to work by his side? Growing in power each day as you learn to control that monstrous source of yours, Dolvain asked.
But Kyrus had nothing to follow that but. Kyrus could not disagree with Dolvain's logic.
I think we have talked too long already, Dolvain said. If anyone noticed your absence, it may seem suspicious. However, one last thing before you leave.
Kyrus spent the remainder of the afternoon working on sketches for new airships, based on an idea he had. Brannis had made good use of the Stonefolk's dragon-working techniques to make weapons. He wanted to see if the same principles could be applied to making armored ships. They would look like hideous monstrosities of steel, armored like knights but in the shape of a ship, impossible to float upon water. If he could fold runes into those plates, though... It warranted thought, and lots of planning and figuring. The rune structures would be vast, covering not only the surfaces of the airship, but layers beneath those surfaces as well. Old, sea-kissed wood could hold a rune, but nowhere near so well as steel. The new ships would bear wards strong enough to turn aside cannonballs, if he could only find someone with a source strong enough to ignite a rune structure so large and intricate. Kyrus grinned.
About time I saw some use of this source of mine, beyond playing at Rashan's tests.
There were other uses he could put it to, but he wanted to bury Dolvain's warnings deep in his mind.
With the shielding spell Dolvain showed me, I should be safe enough from Rashan, at least while I am vigilant.
The thought of Rashan reminded Kyrus that he had been invited to the warlock's offices in the Tower of Contemplation. It was unusual for Rashan to make any sort of social plans,
but it had certainly sounded like one when he suggested it. Most often, if the warlock wanted Kyrus or Brannis, he would send word by messenger, and the implication was that the time frame was now. All along the walk to the tower, Kyrus wondered what sort of mood he would find the warlock in. Rashaan's moods were as shifting as the Katamic, never quite calm but ranging from pleasant enough to evacuate to higher ground, often with little notice or time to react. The door was open and waiting for him when he arrived, which in and of itself was unusual for Rashaan's doors. He was the sort who seemed to think that doors ought to be closed when not being actively traversed. "Come in, Brannis." The warlock's voice sounded a bit different than normal, as Kyrus heard him call out as he hesitated briefly outside. Kyrus stepped carefully into the office, wondering what was amiss, but unable to quite grab hold in his thoughts as to what it was. The chalice in Rashaan's hand gave him a clue. "Are you drunk?" Kyrus wondered aloud, arching an eyebrow. "A touch, perhaps. Just a touch. Please, come in, have a seat." Rashaan motioned to a comfortable-looking chair that had not been there when Kyrus had last seen the office. In fact, Kyrus noted, a fair bit of remodeling had been done, including the repair of the holes through its walls. As Kyrus took the offered seat, the door swung shut behind him, and the usual wards sprang to life. "I did not think that would be possible for a demon," Kyrus noted, prodding Rashaan for an explanation. "Takes more effort, I suppose, letting alcohol take its course upon me. But I needed a bit of respite. Too many things happening, even for me to deal with all at once, I think," Rashaan explained. He seemed more human than he ever had before. "But never mind about that. I think it is about time we got to know one another, not Brannis?" "You want me to have a drink with you then?" Kyrus asked. Rashaan laughed. "Not hardly." The warlock stood and, going against what he had just said, took up a matching chalice for Kyrus. He picked up the decanter and poured a white liquid into it. "You just said you did not want me to drink with you," Kyrus protested as the beverage was pressed into his hands, with slightly less crispness and efficiency of motion than Rashaan was wont to display. Kyrus lifted the chalice to his nose and sniffed. "Sweet milk," Rashaan said, then smiled at him. "Last thing the tower needs is more holes in it, am I right?" Sweet milk was a treat given to good children at bedtime. It was warmed goat's milk sweetened with honey. Kyrus had never tasted it himself, but Brannis had loved it as a boy, as had near to every child in the Empire whose parents could afford to waste honey on bedtime treats. "It is delicious," Kyrus commented upon tasting it. "Thank you." "One of the many pleasures of Vaedrus that I thought you might enjoy, Brannis. There was no equivalent in Acardia last I was there." The warlock spoke quietly, the first explicit admission Kyrus had heard from him regarding Tellurak. "So you were from Acardia then?" Kyrus asked, wondering how far Rashaan would be willing to open up to him. "Indeed. Born in Eudur. Did business out of Golis, largely. Traveled the world until I got too old for that sort of nonsense. I had a thought for a bit of fun tonight, Brannis. I have come to understand that I will not have you as an underling for very much longer. It is time we became partners in this endeavor. I have found myself thrust unwittingly into the role of being the brains and wisdom behind the Empire, and I was always the muscle, so to speak. You are the sort whom I could leave behind to run things while I go out to play at war. But ahead of myself." Rashaan shook his head. "The fun part?" "Yes," Kyrus asked. Rashaan might have been drunk, or he might have been faking it, but his words were a far cry from the scenarios that Dolvain had painted. "I would like to get to know you, and I will tell you a bit about myself in return. Where in Acardia is it that you were from?" Rashaan asked, smiling mischievously. "I was born on a farm outside Scar Harbor a bit. I apprenticed there and inherited my master's shop." "I guess that is as good an answer as I've got," Kyrus replied, seeing no harm in it. Rashaan set his chalice down on the desk and stood, walking carefully to the middle of the office.
Huax di Janadu Deldor Wanateksu Elu Mulaftu Skidori Pukanzu Margek Lotok Janubi,
the warlock said as he painted the air with his fingers. Brannis had once seen Rashan work a spell out loud to show him how it was done. This time, a pair of illusory, ghostly hands remained in the air where Rashan had held them when he began the spell. From each finger, a colored line trailed in the wake of Rashan's own fingers as he motioned through the spell. When he finished, a tangle of lines floated in the air. Off to the side of the room, a scene appeared in the air. Kyra saw cobblestone streets and horse carriages. He recognized the Society of Learned Men and the courthouse where his trial had been held. The view flowed, as if they were viewing the scene through a lens, and Kyra saw houses and shops, with unfamiliar signs outside, though he noticed that Drimmer's Pub was still there in Rashan's memory. The scene meandered about the city for a time, with Kyrus lost in a sense of wonder that he had thought simple magic had ceased to be capable of for him. "Your turn," Rashan spoke softly from behind Kyrus, snapping him from his reverie as the illusion faded. The glowing diagram of the spell hung in the air, awaiting him. "Do you remember the words?" Kyrus shook his head, and the runes spelling it out appeared in the air just above the snarl of colors he would have to trace. It took him 5 tries, but Kyrus finally managed the spell for himself. He laid out a vista of his own for Rashan, showing him the view of Scar Harbor as he remembered it. He pointed out his shop, Gruder's Pastries, the Brown Elk Tavern, and a dozen other places, including the wharf he had burned down. The two stayed up into the late hours, trading scenes from their memories. Kyrus showed Marker's Point and Denku Appa to Rashan. He even managed to work in a bit from the mines of Rainsdark as best he could from Brannis's memories. In return, Rashan showed him the Battle of the Dead Earth, attending the birth of Liad the Only, and the draw where he had killed his grandfather. "I'm sorry about yesterday," Kyrus apologized, feeling like he had taken undue satisfaction in his injuring Rashan.
"It was my own fault underestimating you, although technically that was cheating," Rashan commented.
"How do you mean? I just hurled fire like you told me to," Kyrus responded, confused.
"Well, that is why I take much of the blame. What you threw at me was not fire, but dragon fire," Rashan explained.
Kyrus's eyes widened.
"Hurled fire mixed with raw ether. You expelled it faster than it could ignite. I have no idea how you managed it without the physiology to back it up, but it was the same stuff dragons breathe. I could have wound up just like my grandfather, killed in a thoughtless, youthful show of power."
"Worthless, stupid kid I was," Rashan said. "My grandfather was not a good man, but he was not so bad as to deserve an end like that either. Had I been unlucky in Emperors, I might have been killed that day for what I had done. Instead," he gestured to himself as if to say, "everything else happened." "I did not expect regrets from you of all people," Kyrus mused, smiling companionably at the warlock.
"Regrets? I can show you regrets."
The warlock chuckled without mirth. An image appeared in the air between them, a vision of loveliness with honey-blonde ringlets and soft brown eyes. She might have been 18 summers, or years, depending on which world she was from, old.
"She's very pretty."
"Who was she?"
Kyrus asked, assuming that as a regret, she probably qualified for the past tense.
"A girl I loved a long time ago. The first one where I could finally tell the difference between love and simple lust. Everything seemed like love until you really, truly find it. After that, you can see all your other silly dalliances for what they were."
"What became of her?" Kyrus asked.
"Age. Eventually it gets them all," Rashan sighed. "How about you? Did you have a girl back in Scar Harbor before you got swept up in your little adventure?"
Kyrus just smiled in reply and began his own illusion. As it took shape, he was pleased that he could still recall Abile's face clearly enough to paint it for Rashan. He had worried that the time they spent apart would have dulled his memory, left it somehow less vivid. Roshan smiled and nodded sagely. The warlock then took another pull on the decanter, having abandoned the pretense of using a chalice some time ago.
What was her name?
Well, I have no reason to believe she's anything other than still is, but her name is Abile, Kairos stated. But he was surprised to see Roshan perk up.
What was that you said?
The warlock asked, still clearly inebriated. Abile. That is the girl's name. Why do you ask? Kairos inquired, wondering what possibly could have prompted such a reaction.
Try mentioning that name to Celia sometime, Roshan chuckled. But you cannot tell her I was the one to mention it.
As Kairos walked back to his room shortly afterward, he could barely keep his eyelids up. Sweet milk was wonderful at helping children sleep. In larger quantities, it worked as well on adults.
I have to remember to ask Celia in the morning,
Kairos thought, fighting to keep the task in his head as his thoughts became heavy.
Of course, if Juliana is in my room waiting when I get there, I give it a coin flip at best that I do not recall it.
Iridan stood at the prow of the ship, wind whipping past them at a rate that was alarming most of the crew. The sails were stretched taut, and the captain had been forced to ask him to ease his wind spell, lest he tear the ship apart.
I will never be a real warlock practicing with wooden swords in the palace courtyard, or contesting draw after draw with old men. I will go out and make myself a warlock, or die.
The thought sobered him some, acknowledging the very real possibility that his rash action would lead to an early death. There would be no Brannis to look after him, no Phelan to hide him, no Roshan to train him. He would be on his own. The realization that not only was Brannis now a sorcerer, but stronger than him by leaps and bounds galled him. Brannis had been his friend since they were boys, but he had grown up in Brannis's shadow. Brannis had been taller, stronger, more popular, from a better family, or so he believed at the time. When Iridan came into his own magically, he had found some measure of equality with Brannis, a way he could be the strong one, the important one.
If I do not act soon, Brannis will take my place. Roshan is already acting as if Brannis will become a warlock as well, even though he showed all the finesse and skill of an ogre with a needle and thread.
We are coming up on Mune soon, Warlock Iridan, the captain informed him, shouting above the wind. What are your orders?
The man might not have liked his orders, but Iridan at least appreciated that they were followed. He had begun to forget that he outranked nearly everyone, having his company predominated by Roshan and Juliana. She at least ought to have obeyed his orders, but feeling along his newly grown teeth with his tongue reminded him of the reality of that dynamic.
I would pay dearly for Brannis to teach me whatever trick he uses to keep her in check,
he thought sourly.
Perhaps motherhood will temper her disposition.
Iridan had thought to see about getting her with child before he departed, but he found himself acting out of anger at Brannis instead. Brannis might have had everything he ever wanted, but Iridan still had Juliana.
Go higher, well above the clouds. I do not want a repeat of what happened to the thunderstorm, Captain, Iridan ordered.
He reached behind him, to the hilt of Dragon's Whisper, sheathed at his back. It should have given him comfort, a wedding gift from his best friend, but he could not find it.
You can just do everything now, can't you, Brannis?
The blade had been given the name Sleeping Dragon when he received it, but Iridan thought it might have been a subtle jab at his as-yet-untapped depths of skill as a warlock. He had chosen the new name by the quiet swishing it made as it sliced through the air, or wood, stone, or steel. The crew was puzzled by Warlock Iridan's orders, but obeyed. The ship's assigned sorcerer, whom Iridan was unfamiliar with, and whose name he had not bothered to ask, guided the ship higher as they neared the city. The cold night air grew frigid, and breath came shorter as the air thinned in the higher altitude. But Iridan was not concerned.
It will only be for a little while.
Captain, take the ship back to Cadrus and receive new orders, Iridan shouted, feeling a bit dizzy yelling in the thin air.
What do you mean, sir?
The captain asked, but stopped short as Iridan put a foot up on the railing and leapt over it. The captain rushed over to the side of the ship to look down and just caught a glimpse of Iridan in the starlight, disappearing down into the clouds.
What news of the killer? A lyrical voice asked in a perfect tenor. The speaker appeared as a bronze-skinned young man, clad in nothing but a knee-length kilt. He could have been 16 or 18 winters if looks were to be believed. Those looks were liars.
He is as he ever was, Iliardra replied with a sigh. She had resumed the form she had first greeted Rashaan in, with her elongated ears and delicate horns. It was no more the form she was born to than was her companion's, but it was the one she preferred. The two immortals stood in a glade, surrounded by towering pines, and lit by nothing but starlight. The trickle of a brook was the only sound besides their voices. No crickets, no owls, no wolves called the Vale home.
"Shall we tell the others, then, and make his banishment official?" her companion asked.
"I would just as soon not speak of him again, nor trouble the others with such unpleasant talk. He will have no thought of returning, and if he ever does, that will be the time to bear ill news," she replied.
"And what of your son?" asked the bronze-skinned man, who was not so young.
Rashaan wished for a son to carry on after him, and do better than he had done. For love of him I went along and bore him a son, but Iridan is no son of mine. He is as much his father as a boy can be. I gave little to nothing of myself. I fear he is destined for the same fate. The work of the gentle, kindly folk we fostered him with is being undone, and I do not expect it will be repaired.
That is indeed tragic. If you ever need someone upon whom you can unburden your troubles, I am here.
The bronze-skinned man winked slyly.
Perhaps in a dozen seasons or so. First, I ought to watch the fruits of my folly as they rot from the tree, Iliardra replied.
How morbid! Really, I cannot fathom the fascination you have with that place.
The bronze-skinned man scoffed, referring essentially to everywhere else besides where they were.
Become a woman first 3 seasons, and bear a child. See then if your attitude remains the same, she challenged.
An interesting thought, the bronze-skinned man commented, giving it some consideration.